how was it last night? How was the First Omen?
The First Omen? John, I cannot tell you how good that film was. Genuinely, I was so surprised because I'd seen... The trailer intrigued me, right? Because it was that reverse trailer where they had that Fever Ray song. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, quite intrigued by this. But at the same time, I'm the first person to be like, no more sequels, no more prequels, no more spin-offs, no more franchises. So I was kind of loathe to actually go and see it. I was blown away by how good it is. Like, it could totally stand alone. You don't mm-hmm. have to have seen the old, which I hadn't seen it until last night when I went home and watched it. And it was like, I should make sense to watch the film that comes after it. Mm-hmm. It was so good. And it was one of these films where there's a couple moments where you will jump out your skin, but it's not a jump scare. It's not a cash grab type of thing. It's just one of these films that makes you feel deeply uncomfortable the entire time. And for me, anyway, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but there was the whole big thing, the whole sort of thing is a sort of allusion towards female bodily autonomy within religion, mm-hmm. which I just really liked. I thought it was really good. And yeah, there was a couple moments where my soul exited my body, but I was a brave girl and I kept watching.
Good. Oh, that's good. That's, I'm always wary of these remakes and reimaginings and prequels and mm-hmm. all sorts of, and what do you call them, sequels, legacy sequels and all this sort of nonsense, because basically it's just a cash grab. So that's good to hear. I will probably give it a go.
I did think of you actually, because there's, I'm not giving anything away, there's a scene in a club, and do you know how that song that we liked from La Mensita, is it Rumori, the Italian song, that was playing, and I was like, oh, John, we're in the office.
Nice.
Besides, Rome in the 70s does look, I mean, despite all the clear scary shit that's going on, Rome in the 70s does look like quite a cool place.
I'm sure it does.
So I think you and Sammy would both really enjoy it. It's not it doesn't feel cheap or gauche or anything like that. It does genuinely feel like a good standalone horror that has quite a lot to say, I think.
Who was behind it, do you know?
I will have a look. I'm almost certain it is a directorial debut. Mm. But I could be wrong. Arkasha Stevenson?
Nope. Don't know.
First feature-length film. If that seriously is a debut, that's so impressive. Mm-hmm. So the imagery is gorgeous. I'm a big fan of Gustav Doré's illustrations for Dante's Inferno, and it very much had that sort of vibe to it as well, which I really liked. So I think there could be a pod in there.
I don't see why not, yeah. Yeah, I'm just having a look at the director's filmography just now, you're right.
Yeah.
It's smaller things, it's episodes of
shorts.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. I started watching The Man Who Knew Too Much yesterday as well, and anticipation of us doing that at some point, because I think that's next in the list, isn't it?
It is, yes.
The copy of it I had was not playing properly, so I had to get another copy of it, which is fine. It was in the 16-disc DVD box set, but for some reason, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's one out of the 16. The other 15 films have all been one film, so that's fair enough. So I got another copy of it, so started watching that, and it's really good. I think it's going to be a good one to talk about because of the attitudes towards French and Moroccans and all sorts of people, anybody who's not white, basically, which is quite interesting. But yeah, that was a good movie, yeah. Kind of enjoyed that. Yeah. It was a good wee day. Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be up there with our topaz for Julie Andrews' wig.
Yeah, and obviously Doris Day gets to sing in this one, whereas Julie Andrews didn't really get to sing at all. So yeah, it's so much more to talk about.
So I ended up on the Well Good Movies Easter quiz, where I thoroughly disgraced myself. As you know, you were invited to that. I really, really needed to.
Of course, yeah.
I didn't just lose. lost in a spectacular fashion, because one of the rounds was identifying the villain scream from films, which I find impossible because all of those screams sound the same. And everyone else I was on with was like, oh, that's that specific scene from that film where this happens. And I'm going, how are you hearing this? Mm-hmm. Anyways, one of the questions was a jumbled up music round, and Kesarasara was one of the songs. Mm. And one of the other contestants buzzed in too quickly, and he was like, oh, I know the song. And he's like, but I don't know the film. And I was like, I do. I might actually score a point here. So that was the only way I redeemed myself, that. And there was a quote from Dr. Strangelove, which is the famous one about you can't fight in here, this is the war room.
Yeah, you can't fight in the war room, yes.
In that one, yeah. Yeah. Apart from that, no, it was an absolute... Turned out I know nothing about films. I mean, that will not surprise any Movie Scramble listeners, but it was a shocking defeat.
Well, if you're going to do it, you go big, you know, let's face it.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. It just... I always think that I'm quite confident in, you know, my knowledge. Then you, and as I say, you go into that round in particular with the villain scream, I was just like, how can you hear that and know exactly what film that's been plucked from? That's a life skill. Either that or it's neurodivergence.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much, I think. Yeah, no, I sometimes I'm okay at these things, but like sometimes I just blank completely at them. Like you say, you know the stuff, and if somebody tells you, go, yeah, you're right enough, yeah, I can confirm. but ahead of time, yeah, you can't really... sometimes I'm not very good at these things at all. But was it good fun, though? That's the main thing.
It was genuinely good fun. Like, Dave and Craig put a lot of effort into the different rounds. The last round was hilarious as well, because it was like they would read you a clue to a word or a couple of words, and it was, the answer would always be like a sort of Oscar-winning film. So it's like, if you'd been in a car accident, you would get Whiplash, obviously, being the answer. But do that way, everyone else's questions, I was like, I know the answer to this, I know the answer to this. It came to mind. I was like, pass, 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 pass. That's why I always think I'm such a Billy Big Bollocks, because I'm like, oh, I'm going to go on The Chase, and I'm going to go on like one of these, you know, TV quiz shows. And I just think, it's all very well me sitting saying that, watching at home. I would get into the studio and forget every word in the English language, every capital city, every name of a film, every sports person. That would just be standing there with a big fat 0 points by the end of it.
Yeah, that's what happens, unfortunately, because it's completely different when you're sitting in your living room to when you're sitting in a TV studio, I would imagine. I mean, I sit and watch Only Connect and get none of the questions right at all in the house, so I can only imagine what it'd be like in the studio. I'd just be like, look, I'm really sorry. I'm just going to have to start crying now. Can you just edit this bit out?
See, that and University Challenge, I always feel like if you get like one question right in an entire episode, you should be able to be made chief of Mensa, because they're so hard.
I know. It's very specialised, shall we say.
Yeah. And then what I do love is like sometimes, especially in University Challenge, they'll have like a pop culture round where all these like, you know, nuclear physicists have never heard of, you know, Hans Zimmer, and I'm sitting there quite smug like, oh, that's the theme to Interstellar, how can you not know that?
Brilliant. Try to think what else I've been watching. Oh, because when we were on holiday, the apartment we had, it was a smart TV, so they had Netflix, so I was able to watch Italian Netflix, which was quite nice.
That's cute.
You would think it'd be exactly the same all over the world, but it's not. It's all got to do with what companies actually have services in what countries and what licensing agreement they've got. So, for instance, I started watching Preacher on Netflix in Italy, but it's not here on Netflix. It used to be on Amazon here, but now it's just completely gone. Or you can buy it on Amazon for like about £3 an episode or something stupid like that. Mm-hmm. But because it's an AMC thing, I think that's tied into HBO, and they were looking at launching their own service in this country. So you just can't get it at the moment unless you pay for it over and above any subscription services. Yeah. But yeah, so it's things like that and stupid stuff like SWAT, the police procedural thing, which...
Oh, again, that's the guy that wrote The Shield, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's nonsense, but it's okay. it's all right. Started watching that as well, which was okay. And again, you can't go watch it here. It's on Sky here rather than there. Yeah. So it's
endlessly on Sky. I feel like it's on one of those channels where it's just like swat, like the whole day of just. Aye. I'm like, how many episodes does this program have?
Oh, hundreds. There are hundreds of them. There's like six or seven seasons of like 20 episodes. So yeah, there's loads and loads of them. It's just crazy busy. Have you seen Get Gotti yet on? Have you still got Netflix?
Yeah. I haven't seen that. I've seen Gotti, the terrible John Travolta.
No.
I've not seen this.
This is a documentary about the police and the FBI's attempt to prosecute John Gotti. It's a three-part thing, and it features sort of talking heads from both sides, from like FBI, police, and like some of the wise guys and all this as well. Some of the turned informant and everything, and it's really well done. And it's over like I say, it's 3 1-hour episodes, so it doesn't outstay its welcome. They've not tried to make it into like a six-part series or anything like that, and it's excellent. It's very good casual watching because you can just watch like half an hour of it, and they go into the various cases and all this sort of stuff. Like they got them up on RICO charges, the racketeering stuff and all that, to try and get them the same way that that's how they brought a lot of those things in for gangsters in the first place, because they were able to try and prosecute them on these charges and all that. So it's interesting that the way they did it. Oh, and obviously there's a lot of archival footage because it was the 80s. So there was a lot of TV footage of him. He was a star as well. It's bizarre. He courted this sort of public image for, you know, coming from an organisation. It was renowned for its secretiveness, and people didn't know who they were. And he was like, "Hi there, hello, John Gotti here." You know, all this sort of stuff. It's crazy. It's really, but it's very entertaining. And have you seen the Three Body Problem yet? Have you watched that on Netflix?
No, everyone's raving about this. I instead dedicated my time to something really lighthearted, as you can imagine, called Turning Point, which is it's like 9 episodes, but fully worth it. And it starts in like from the Russian Revolution and takes you right up into the invasion of Ukraine. And explains how global politics have shaped, well, one, the nuclear arms race, and two, Putin's Russia, if you want to call it that way. It was extremely interesting, but one of those ones where also I was going to bed every night going, are we all going to die tomorrow?
Yeah.
So not lighthearted at all.
Where's that on?
Netflix. It was excellent. It's like 9 very, very wordy hour-long episodes, and my reading list has become gargantuan because every time they put somebody's name up, it was like author of such and such. And I was like, well, I want to get that book as well. But very, very interesting, because I think there's a lot of assumptions made about maybe who he is and how he's sort of, because it goes right back and it takes you through like the Cuban Missile Crisis, it takes you through the Oppenheimer situation where he obviously what he was doing and how that fueled tensions in Russia. It's so interesting. I think it just gives people a lot of context, and you've got like Russian journalists commenting, Ukrainian journalists, historians, all that sort of thing. So it's a fairly balanced scope of talking heads that are on it as well. It's not just like, you know, America or the superheroes, because I think there's an acknowledgement that obviously, you know.
Yeah, because at the start of the 20th century, Europe was a very different place. There was the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which held sway. They were massive at the time, and obviously they sort of fell into demise. I'd watched something about that. It was sort of the lead up to the First World War. A couple of months ago, and it was really, really good. I can't even remember where I saw it, but it was an excellent documentary, and it kind of told you how basically the First World War came to be because of all these various factions, and like Austria basically got too big, basically, and they couldn't control their own empire, and there was all sorts of factions from outside of it pushing in, and it just all basically collapsed around about the same time. So it was really rather, really rather interesting. It's pretty good. But yeah, Three Body Problem's excellent. Really, really good. It's
a big international hit, is it not?
Yeah. It's an expensive program. You can see where the money's gone into it as well. It's a lot of money. It's like 8 parts of just under an hour each, which is really good. I haven't read the source novel of it, so
is it based in a book?
Yes, it's based on a book by a Chinese author who I cannot remember his name at the moment. And he wrote three books. He wrote a trilogy. And apparently the first series is based on the first book. It kind of follows that. But
right.
They've changed an awful lot. And I think, well, I can tell you why they've changed an awful lot, because in the Chinese one, there is only maybe one or two sort of main protagonists in it. But they've changed it to five people initially, which I think they kind of cover the same sort of information, but it's spread out over like a couple of different people, and they've changed certain elements of the story. But the basis of the story is pretty much the same, basically about aliens that are coming to invade us, but not for 400 years. So,
interesting.
And because of that, I started, there was a Chinese production of it as well called Three Body, which was released about a year ago, and you can get it on Amazon Prime, and I've started watching that as well, and that's wildly different. It's over
30. You're literally watching them side by side.
Yeah, I watched the Netflix one first, and then I went back and started watching this other one, and there are many differences in it. The Chinese one is 30 episodes, and I think it must cover the whole sort of cycle, but it's done in such a way that it can be quite slow, and it can go over things again and again. And there's like weird wee sort of musical interludes in it and things like that as well, which is just kind of strange. But it's still a pretty decent drama, actually. And because it's so different to the Netflix version, it's almost like watching something, not even adjacent, but something pretty much different to it. So it's pretty good.
That's really cool. That is really good. It's funny because, again, I'm always like, no, don't remake, because I'm... Chris got me the Bridge box set for an anniversary, so I've binge-watched the first three seasons of that. I'm about to start season four. And I know that there's, like, an American version and an English-French version as well. But I'm so loath to watch it, because they will be identical. They will be a, you know, not a word-for-word remake necessarily, but on a very, very similar vein, and I'm quite enjoying my Scandies just now. It's funny how... even though that's a remake or whatever you're watching, they're so wildly different that you don't feel like you're watching the same thing, which is nice. That is obviously, that's what you want.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The UK one is it the tunnel? So it's the tunnel.
Yeah, because it's the Channel Tunnel. Yeah, England and France.
Yeah, that's right. I remember. I haven't watched any of it, but yeah, you're right. I watched the first three series of The Bridge, the Scandi one, and it's really, really good. Really enjoyed that, but I kept away from the American one because just thought, nah. I think it's all on Disney or something, all of the American one. It was,
I think it was FX.
And I think it, like, I can't remember exactly who, but it had like named actors on it, so it was pretty decent. It was all right.
Yeah, that's where we ended up watching the original Omen last night, because that's a 20th Century Fox. So I was like thinking, what platform would that be on? And Chris was like, it's on Disney Plus. And I was like, forget, because they own that as well. There is actual adult stuff on that as well. But watching that last night, I have to say, it's a lot more camp than I expected. Because what we'd seen in the afternoon was so scary that when we watched this, and I was just like, I just put fuck out that wee boy. This was like, really, you put fuck out the Antichrist, would you?
And obviously, it's Gregory Peck, isn't it?
Looking handsome as ever.
So yeah, it's like major movie star kind of idea, whereas most horror films now don't have that sort of level. It's like having Tom Cruise in the Omen film, you know, the first Omen starring Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt or somebody like that.
He should do a horror, though. He really should, because I always think that things like Interview with the Vampire and Collateral and stuff, like, they're his best films, I think, in terms of his performance. He should do a horror.
Well, he did The Mummy. So that's the argument against it.
that's fair.
No, I know. I was being a bit obtuse there. I know exactly what you mean.
No, it's still funny though, because I still, to this day, will go on YouTube and watch the No Sound Mummy trailer, because it's just really funny.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame about that film, because I'd high hopes for the whole universe.
You're telling me.
Universe. I was looking forward to that. Yeah. but
too.
We're kind of getting that in a way with the Blumhouse ones. They're kind of, they've started obviously doing those, so yeah. But they're not joining them up, which is actually quite a nice thing as well, I suppose. It means there's no expectations on them to cross over or anything. There's not going to be like a Russell Crowe figure involved in any of them. I know.
And that's fair enough. That's a sensible business decision that I can fully get behind.
It's not a bad thing. Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. So, cool. I think it'll be, we should actually do a back to back of the First Omen and the Omen, because just even style wise, mm-hmm. yes, they are linked, but it's two completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very much of their time, these original horror films. Well, it kind of changed, I suppose, between even The Omen and like The Exorcist. Very different type of filmmaking. They're not, the Omen's quite glossy from what I remember. Nice colours to it and everything, and you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, they obviously live in very fancy houses and stuff like that, so it is all very sort of ornate and over the top. I just find it quite schlocky. I guess I don't know, I think because it's held up as a sort of cult classic, I was expecting mm-hmm. something that was a lot scarier. But then, because to me, watching The Exorcist now, I still could watch it, like, you know, hands over my mm-hmm. eyes, can barely look at it. It really scares the shite out of me. Whereas this just felt a bit, I'm going to say B-movie, and I mean it in a negative way.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It was held up at the time as being a very good example of a horror film, but tastes have changed. You've got to remember it was, 50 odd years ago that it was out, probably longer, you know, so...
Yeah. It's 76,
So, yeah, different time. In fact, what came after The Exorcist, was 73, 74, something like that. So, good stuff. But then, of course, things changed right after that with the likes of Alien, because that was a horror film in space, and it had a totally different tone to it. Not just the fact that it was in space, but the whole way that they actually did the horror film, and they were able to do practical effects. Mm-hmm. Like a real jump when it got to that sort of stuff. So it's interesting. I mean, if we only had our horror buddy.
I know, our resident horror buff that actually knows. I mean, I bet you Simi has seen every Omen. I didn't realise there was loads of them, but of course there is. So I bet you he's seen all of them.
Quite possibly, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me. I think I've seen three of them. I don't know if there's any more after that.
Really?
Yeah.
I think there is a fourth.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure they're all on Disney Plus, and I'm sure I counted four yesterday. But I mean, do they all have Gregory Peck in them? Because no offense, he was cracking on in the first one.
No, he's only in the first one. It's it goes on after that. I think Sam Neill's in the third one. A very young Sam Neill is in the third film. Yeah, I know. Is it third? Yes,
because a lot of these actors, though, it's a way in, isn't it? I'm quite sure that young Sam Neill, the script for the third Omen, didn't set his little creative heart alight, but it was a gig.
It's an establishing performance that gets your name out there. You know, they all have to start something. Very few actors start in a massive big role. They usually have to build up, don't they? So.
Unless you're an Nepo baby, which is a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was one I saw today. It was, is it Nicole Peltz Beckham?
Oh, I read about that. She's made a film about a poor person.
Yeah, and she's
a woman
full makeup.
Whose dad
the
is the head of Disney.
Yes.
The Guardian have described it as poverty porn, and... Yeah, despite the fact that, you know, I think they said something like, despite the fact that, you know, she's obviously going through these various traumas, they were like, you've never seen someone's cheekbones so perfectly lit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which really cracked me up. I thought that was an excellent wee line in a review. But yeah, I mean, again, that's totally like, would not be making this film if she was not the daughter of somebody who is a, you know, chief exec at Disney and her in-laws weren't the Beckhams.
There's a fair amount of money involved in that one, but apparently it's a rubbish film, so
sure.
Coming to Disney Plus soon. No doubt.
What was the film that David Beckham was in? Was it a Guy Ritchie film?
It was the King Arthur film. He had a small role.
That's what
in that.
It was. Yeah. That's what it was.
And he wasn't
was
the
he
worst
not
thing
terrible in
that film.
In it?
He was pretty. Well, he only had like two lines or something. He didn't like have a major role or anything or any action scenes. He was hanging about at the Sword and the Stone because there was a big procession line of people coming to take this, trying to take the sword out of the stone, and he was one of the guards there, and I think he had two lines, and one of them was like "move along" or something. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't up for an Olivier Award or anything after that one, but you know, it was fine. I don't think he's a particularly bad actor or good actor. I think he was just sort of put in there just as a name. Probably had something to do with the production as well, but yeah, probably not the worst actor though in a Guy Ritchie film.
Which is no mean feat, I suppose.
Yeah. Having said that, The Gentleman's pretty good. I finished watching that.
That's on my watch list. That does look like good fun. I did enjoy the film. So
exactly, it's fun. That's what it is. It does get quite dark in the second half of it, but it's still very entertaining. It's not totally dead serious all the time because obviously there's a lot of geezers and stuff in it and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's all pretty good. Yeah, that's good fun. Yeah. Can't really complain about that either. So, yes.
I'm very excited about this.
Come on.
It was you that put me onto this because you did the wee preview thing for the website. I'd never heard of it until you.
Yeah, it's just was just interested in it because it was Dev Patel, because I find him to be quite an interesting actor in the first place, just because he's been around for such a long time. That was my Amazon Echo plug.
She's not sure.
That's what I got. Yeah. Don't know what she's not sure about, but she's definite she's not sure.
I forgot that Billy Whitelaw was an original Omen, and last night I was like, that's the craze mum. And Chris was like, you do know that she's not the craze mum in real life. But she's good in it. She's scary.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. It's, you know, top actors. That's what it comes down to, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you would notice with the original Omen that there's none of this quiet bang stuff.
No,
it's not made in that way whatsoever. So and that's always a pleasant change to see something that's been done slightly differently as well. I take it's quite a short film,
about an hour and 45 minutes, but I had my episode yesterday in the cinema with the guy sitting next to me. I was seething. I've never been so seething in my entire life. Like, who comes into a film late and then watches YouTube out loud on their phone? Why are you in the cinema if you want to watch other videos? And to me, I'm sitting looking at him going, you can see me looking at you. And your phone is literally reflecting off my glasses. Like, you must see how annoying this is and that I can hear it over some Latin prayers that are going on. So I did. I actually went up to the guy at the end and I was like, I'm really sorry. I don't want to be a dick. But the guy next to me is watching YouTube on his phone and he just went, fuck's sake.
Aye.
Came in after me. And I was going to be like, oh, don't make it obvious it was me that complained, but then who else would be complaining? Yeah, he was only sitting next to me. So, but I mean...
And did he stop?
Eventually, yes. But it's funny because Chris and I have said this, so I don't know if you went to the Banksy exhibition in...
No, I didn't.
Gallery of Modern Art, but you got like a pouch thing that you put your phone into and they sealed it, and you only got to open it again at the end because obviously they didn't want anyone taking pictures, etc. The cinemas need to do something similar because even last night with The Devil, and I think it's because I wear glasses, so everything reflects the amount of lights that I saw in the cinema, and same with Monkey Man to a certain extent. I'm like, why can't you just put it? These films are not long. It's a horror film, so you know you're sitting about 90 minutes, maybe a wee bit more. Why are you sitting with your phone on? And equally, I mean, yesterday was just, as I say, that was the absolute worst. I've never had anyone playing loud videos on their phone in the cinema before. So part of me was like, why are you here? Just go and sit in McDonald's and do that.
Yeah, aye. Or stay at home and do it. Yeah, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. If people, it's attention spans and all that as well. I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but because people are on their phones all the time, they don't know how to behave. And when... It really needs cinemas to actually do something about it rather than you having to say to them, because they've all got cameras in the cinemas that look at the audience because they're looking for people who are actually recording the film
uh-huh.
as well. So they can see these wee pockets of light. But the guy at the front desk, you know, he's not going to volunteer himself to go in and start a fight with somebody, you know?
No.
But it should be a zero tolerance thing. It really should.
It was. I think, do you know that way, like, people are on the... I think it was the fact that it was videos that were making sound as well. I've never actually experienced that before. But yeah. It was quite funny. I came back and sat down and I said to Chris, what if I missed? And he was like, just more prayers. And I was like, good. At least it wasn't like a serious part of the film. just a regular mass. So it was fine. But yeah, I felt so incensed, I think, just because the volume was on. As mm-hmm. well, like I could almost have not have tolerated the phone being on because it was a bright light. But I think the fact that he was actually watching fucking YouTube videos, and it was like game reviews as well, so there was like little pew pew sounds. I was just like, what the fuck? What are you doing?
I'm surprised you didn't go, Chris, sort him out.
I know, actually, I was tempted, but then I hate.
No, you did the right thing.
I don't ever want to go and. But then it was quite funny because a few times after that, once he actually came into the room, was like, put your phone off, blah, blah, blah. The guy, there was another couple of guys that they obviously sent in, various cinema attendees, who, do you know how like the sort of the specs thing that they used to check?
Yeah.
So they just came in a few times and just stood at the end of our row. Like, it was, the guy must have felt so uncomfortable for the entire film, but good, because maybe he'll think twice next time about taking it out. So I think as well, see, because I've been watching stuff in the house that has subtitles as well, because we're watching The Bridge, you cannot be on your phone and watch subtitles at the same time. So I'm properly trying to, even just in the house, not be on my phone, because it's not good practice if you're trying to actually review something and talk about it anyway. Mm-hmm. But, and I see, because I've got glasses, I think the light bounces off of it a lot worse. But yeah, I became a cinema Karen yesterday. No regrets though, none whatsoever.
No, I don't think that really is a thing, because people know how to behave, especially in cinemas. You're in a dark room with a bunch of other people who are there for a specific reason, to see a film, not to listen to what you're doing on your phone or even watch what you're doing. Yeah, if you want to do that. And I really think that cinemas need to have a sort of zero tolerance policy to that. It's not a case of, can you put that off? It's a case of, get to fuck, we out, you know?
I know, I kind of thought actually that he might get chucked out, because I could see him still, he put it in his hoodie pocket and I was like, I can still see you, I can see what you're doing. So I kind of thought they might have chucked him, but they didn't. But seemingly it's getting really bad in like actual theatres as well, mm-hmm. people on their phone during plays, which is also insane to me, because again, what are you paying your ticket bucks for? But yeah, and I think in a horror as well, you want to immerse yourself, you want to have the wee jumps and, you know, all that sort of mm-hmm. thing. So I did not want to hear his video game reviews, which was just
it just takes you completely out of it, and it's not fair. But unless they're pulled up about it, then they'll just continue to do it. That's what it comes down to. They know they'll get away with it, because it's a very British thing that people will stare, give you a hard stare in the darkness,
which is what I started to
but not say anything. But then again, there are some people who would just go from like 0 to 60, and they would just say, mate, shut that off, and they'll say what, and then just hit them. So then that just disrupts everybody, you know. So
I wasn't going to start a brawl in screen 5 of Sunny World, but that way, as I say, he was late in, which annoyed me as well. And the more it continued, I was like, nah, fuck it. I'm not sitting here for an hour and a half watching you watch fucking... So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go and do this. And I was actually shaking as I got back into the cinema. I've never been so mortified in my life. But I would do it again. In fairness, people need to learn.
I'm at the cinema tomorrow, actually.
Oh, what are you going to see?
I'm going to see The Book of Clarence.
Then is that getting a UK release?
Yes. Aye, yep.
Oh, brilliant. Because remember, it was cancelled.
It's press screening tomorrow, I think. It's a couple of weeks it's coming out.
Brilliant. Okay, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
There's Abigail, which I think is a horror film. And then there's the new Luca Guadagnino film, Challengers, the Zendaya one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's getting good reviews as well.
The tennis sex film, yeah.
Do you know what's really interesting, though? Every single actress who has played a love interest in Spider-Man has gone on to make a tennis film.
Of course, yeah, Kirsten Dunst.
Dunst did Wimbledon, and mm-hmm. Emma Stone did the Billie Jean King film, and now she's in... It's a weird Spider-Man to tennis trajectory that seems to take place.
I didn't think about that at all.
I've also booked as well, as part of GFT's 50th birthday, to go and see The Lives of Others and In the Mood for Love, because they're re-releasing a whole bunch of films, including Blade Runner 2049, Cinema Paradiso, lots and lots of kind of cult classics. So book those two to start off with, because Chris has never seen In the Mood for Love, and I think I might get a tear. I think I might get a tear out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well,
such a good film.
That would be a legitimate case of having your phone on and recording them. <in this summer.
laughs> You must.
If somebody complains and say, but he doesn't cry at films, you go, fair enough, yeah. Right, okay.
Although he did tell me that he cried at The Lion King as a wee boy, and I was like, oh, that's so cute. Which immediately, you don't ever say that's so cute to a man, apparently that's not.
But what part did he cry? Did he cry when Scar died, or did he cry when Mufasa died?
I know, actually, I should have asked for context in this, yes, just to make sure that I'm not married a psychopath. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, so. Good stuff.